Mr. Allgood, Reel 2. You were just about to tell me about a casualty that happened as soon as you got there.
Yeah, there was, you know, the next morning, because the main thing there was the trouble, like baggies and whatever. And then you got the next morning, and someone said, Mr. Richards got a last night. And there was no great deal, big deal made of anyone being sort of like that. And I think the company commander got injured at all, Mr. Major Gordon, the flash wouldn't have been there. He's like a father figure, he was. I remember going out and the first patrol I went on, because the idea was you go to no man's land and just see where what the chimps are doing out there or what have it, or to capture one, or whatever they want you to do. And you go to the line, like you moved it beyond, so you go out in a valley somewhere, there's sort of a path to a minefield. And before you go out, I always remember we lined up and the officer walked up and down and he said, now tonight, chaps, I'm not a pigtail for interrogation. And when this chap next to me, I always remember his name, Clutterbuck. And he said, sorry, buddy, I'll get two for you and the old John, John. And the officer, he went to the end of the line, he'd come back thinking that's me, and eyeball, like. He said, one will do, and I didn't say, up and off he went. And that's the sort of thing he went on, you know. And I always remember the first patrol I went on because we're going down the valley, and there's another valley they do off, and all of a sudden the shooting started, and the shooting was returned, firing. In the middle of career, this is, and suddenly a boy shouted out, "It's Able Company, hell!" And our own company, one of our own platoon, patrol for another company on the other side of the. I think that the horrible thing I had out there, we had to go on a hill in the middle of no man's land as a sort of a safe haven for any patrols who got into trouble. We have to hold this hill for, I think that was a week or a fortnight, I know it's only like an eternity. But you overlook with the Chinese all through it, anything you've done, you have to do it now. I mean, bearing in mind, you've got no toilets or what have you. You deploy, down the bushes and all that. And like I said, you're overlooked by these Chinese alone, and no times the Americans used to come and bomb these Chinese, and you could see this napalm dropping on the hills or mountains, whatever they call them. And the Chinese on the way, the napalm would catch me on the nail on the way, they're on fire. And all of them, I'm not saying anything like that. What was more worrying was how close I got to us. But the whole world out there, I think there's only two instances when there's a couple of patrols starting to try to come back. I'll always remember one of them, and because they liked this one for interrogation, and they went down to help us patrol out, and they liked the prisoner. And I just think he must have been 7 foot tall. They pulled him back up the hill again to where they were, and the time they got him there, they being dark, and all the conclusions you'd imagine. His back was virtually ripped out of him. He was a Mongolian, I think. And he was dead the time he got him up there. But the horrible sight is.
Did you ever capture any Chinese on your patrols?
No. I've been on patrols, we laid there in like panty fields, and you have to lay there silent. And you could have been there all night just before the daybreak and you start moving off. And when you start moving off, you see on the next paddy field that the Chinese have been there, doing the same thing as you had at the same time. You know, you never met, but the paddy field was upright when you went there, but when you come back, you see where they're from land. You know.
How many of these Chinese hit by napalm did you see?
Oh, I hate to think because I mean, that's it. I suppose that's a couple of miles away, perhaps I don't know, a mile away. But you can see them out up there. Funny thing, which, when you're in the valleys, so doing a patrol, and what struck me was the command up went up to one another, the patrol leader, who followed by a lieutenant or a second lieutenant, and he'd want some night, and he'd just get on the walkie-talkie thing. and a Silicon commando called Valiant. That was uncanny, it was. I mean, you can imagine someone sitting there on the trench down and suddenly has daylight. I mean, if they were flares, you then got a chance to get out of the way before the flare had affected.
So this was an officer calling for a searchlight?
Yeah, the searchlight for some reason or other, in fact, he got the seat up.
Do you remember who was in charge of your platoon and your company?
Yeah, my platoon leader, I know that because he wanted me to be his battery, his name was Second Lieutenant Paul Tipping. And I read when I've been out since, he since became the battalion commander, CEO of the regiment, colonel. I should think he'd retired now, obviously, but he did make the colonel of the regiment. The first night, I think, or the second night, I went up there. We went in his dugout, which is a bit bigger than ours, perhaps. And about 6 or 8 hours in there, and he used to sit there and have a sing song. He'd make the sing. He used to take the mind off of it. He was good.
What did you think of the leadership in the trenches in Korea?
Very good, very good. I thought they knew what they were doing. I mean, some of them, I think some of the officers were National Service anyway, but they knew what they were doing. Mr. Paul Tipping, then, he wanted a batman. And I sussed up what the chances are. I thought, well, if all the people are on patrol, if you're on patrol and you've got to get smoked, the person who's got to get smoked out has got to be the leader. And if you're his batman, you've got to be beyond the leader with his radio. So I thought, well, that's not a good prospect, so I turned it down. I mean, simply, that's the best job you could have, actually, a batman. And civilian diver, and not war diver.
So had you been asked to be batman?
Yeah, I did it a couple of times on I got asked to put these tins of stuff, you'd put on these little primer stores and what have you, and I got a lot of sand in it. I think I dropped it a little bit, but I didn't do it in the end, though. I just done a couple of days.
Now, when you first went into positions in the front line in Korea, what was the name of the place you went to? Do you know? Did you go just to the one position, or did you go to more than one?
No, the only time I moved, like I said, when I went to this hill, which was in the middle of No Man's Land. There's a big territory that they call No Man's Land between one and the other. I mean, to be quite honest, most of the general foreigners were in the time we got there.
Was there much shelling when you were in the front line?
We never got any, no. I must admit, I don't think we had a lot of shelling. They used to get helicopters come over, that was uncanny. They just sent a helicopter, I think a helicopter. I remember this trouble going that used to be loudspeaker on it. And they'd say, they never mentioned me, but they'd say, Private John Jones, your wife, so-and-so, living in so-and-so, so-and-so street, London, is waiting for you, wanting to get up and all this, and that's unbelievable, I didn't get the information.
Was being in the trenches an unpleasant experience for you, or? What was the worst thing about it?
Well, the conditions, and perhaps a flight factor, and you could be, we were still vulnerable to being attacked by the Chinese, so I know you've got your safety, or you've got your barbed wire, and they've got to take them all through there. So you still have got the chance of getting the run by the Chinese.
What kind of food were you getting in the front line?
We used to be down there, the truck would come up, and that would be tipped around and couldn't. We were glad when we went on the milk and cave rations out there, because the milk and rations were there. I mean, when I was in this hill, I know, but I know a chap who didn't smoke, And Rina's dug out, and I used to give him my tin of fruit salad, and he gave me his 20 that was free. So I went through this 20 and my 20, that's 40 like you spoke today. I mean, you didn't think it wasn't doing any harm then. I suppose it'd be quite honest that I was doing any more good to calm me down a bit. But you know, I used to get a little tin, we used to satellite, and they were good meals, you know, for the conditions you're in. And then, of course, bring them out, like you've got candy, toilet roll, well, not toilet roll, some toilet pieces, and some things like that, you see.
Did the Chinese launch any attacks on your positions whilst you were there?
No, no.
About how long do you think you were in the trenches in the front line?
5 months, actually.
Was this 52 or 53?
I'm up in 53. Within the 53.
So, were you in Korea also in winter conditions?
No, I can never recall. I'm a bit hazard at the dates now. I know I spent 5 months, 4 or 5 months out there, and the little time was did it get colder.
So, if you went there in the winter, you must have been there in the summer of 52 or the summer of 53, one or the other, wasn't it?
It was 52 because I came home in 53, yeah.
Were there any casualties at all in your platoon?
There was a one or two, like I said, you know, they're saying that sort of had a laugh. Like, there was a chap in Hong Kong who, like me, he was 22, 24, so he'd never been christened, he got me to be a witness to him. And one of his names. And then he got pushed out there, but that never deteriorated, he got killed. I mean, it's...
How did he get killed?
I don't know, you don't know, because that wasn't... It's, when we got to the hill, they got separated, he went to another platoon, perhaps, like that, you see, and until we come back, then that youth sort of realised someone say Sorcerer's Garden House, but it was someone like that. I don't think they sort of made a big issue of anyone being called the fact that just as well as that.
Would people get killed on patrol?
Oh yeah, you know they get them. I mean, you go there and you meet one of their patrols, you obviously return the fire. But I never had any, I can't remember anyone being with me not getting shot when I was on patrol.
When your comrades took the Chinese prisoner, did you see him close up?
He was Mongolian. And I was 2 or 3 feet away from him when he pulled him up there. And what happened, his back, he fell on this barbed wire stake, which was at an angle. And of course, it was going to be dark and the appointment is, you know, there's nothing you can do about it.
His back had got ripped on the barbed wire?
Yeah, that's terrible, really. Yeah, well, I mean, in any circumstances, you can't sort of, you try to duck and look what you're doing and pulling people at the same time.
But did he die?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see him die?
Oh, well, I think he was dead anyway, but I was. He was one captain there. I had a running goal, that man anyway. His name was Eva Hardy. And he used to go back. It's occasional, believe it or not, to high echelon, which was, you do say, a couple hours extra training or something down there, for one thing or another. And because that included group managers. You can imagine being on this hill, perhaps, you didn't do much exercise. But he's gone a route march, and unlike any other officer, he'd have the same gear as you, a full kit, and he'd march with you. I mean, most officers have just been there. Just a uniform, like, and scrubby, cool side, but he would never ask you to do anything which you couldn't do yourself. And that's another case I had, where I should have been put, I think it's a cut off of me, I've been still in the army court after, because the big thing here was you should never drink the water from the springs, and there's several springs, and it's like ice cold water. And we sat there one day and on this hill. I think he was giving us a lecture, something about 6 hours, this character. And he had his water can, and he got some water for hopped in some of the mortgage, had him spilled in the spring. So he pulled down the anisette and he said to me, he said, "My Lord," he said, "that's cold. I say, here comes the spring." And he said, "What?" You know, he gripped me there. And I was just quick thinking then. I said, "Not the water, sir." I said, I got the water from the tank. I said, "And put the bottle in the spring, which threw it down." "Oh, good thinking," he said. But then again, that's another one of these things. Yeah, that's dysentery, but it's very worse than if you drank a spring water. But he was a real soldier's captain. He'd never asked me to do nothing. I've seen him hack through fields, I don't know what, march, but yeah, do everything with it.
About how many patrols do you think you went out in?
I should do about one a week, I think, something like that. I should do every one a week. One every 4 to 5 days, or something like that.
How did you feel before you went out on patrol?
Not very happy with it. Very worried. I don't think it's a hero, is it? Quite honest, I'm sure they didn't. I mean, I think they try to con you a bit. They used to say to you, the officers, that, you know, they're these chinks. They've got nothing to worry about, because if they aim at you, they don't miss you. And this clutterbuck chap said, "Yes, what about you aiming at him, though, you know?" But that's nonsense, really, because they used to have a gun they called a Burke gun. And they used to pull the trigger, and 36 bullets would come out. And spread something like 12-foot spread. Now you've got to be aimed very much, you've got to aim it forward, it's to kill anyone if you go. That's why they call it the burp, there's a good burp, look at it.
Did any incidents happen whilst you were on patrol that you can describe?
No, there's that one where I said that was all. On patrol, like one of the other patrols right there. I remember going out and going over the river, used that stepping stone. And I was scared, I only had one phone. And I put my hand on the bar of the wire and looked at me. And I had a choice of that handkerchief that I had to stay around it and carrying all the home back. I looked at the options, but I think I'd prefer carrying on the one back on my own because that's impossible, but it's still on the own.
Did you go right up to the Chinese trenches on patrol?
No, never got that far. They've got them from Northern Australia, this is a big. I wouldn't say what the distance is between there, 0.9 miles, but that was quite a big area.
Did you ever bump into Chinese patrols when you're out on patrol?
No, as I said, that one occasion when we lay down this paddy field, like where we got ambushed. I wasn't until we got to school the next morning and got up in the day, okay, dusk. And we've seen that they've done the same thing.
What did you think would happen to you if you got captured by them?
I hate to think. I was very scared, I must admit. I was, what, 19? Living out north.
Did you ever have any superstitions or lucky charms or anything like that?
No.
Did the soldiers in Korea sing any songs, or are there any special songs that you sang?
Oh, there's. They say maybe home songs, but I wouldn't want to repeat them. But the Korean people themselves, I guess.
What do you mean, they were rude songs?
Yeah.
Were there any pop songs of the day that...
Yeah, I didn't try to think what they were, because I remember Jules Stafford saying. You always get one or two songs for the day, which get over and over again. And the other one was You Belong to Me, I think it was. That was very popular that day. See the Pyramids of Armageddon, of course it would seem, because all the people who out there have seen the Pyramids, I mean, they'd come through the Suez Canal.
Did you get letters or parcels from home?
Yeah, from my mother. That's I did start writing to. I got an address in the uniform, one of the jackets. So I thought there's this young lady's address that was in Scotland. It was amazing. I thought I'd write to her, that's what I did. And I got a reply, and bear in mind I was 19 at the time, and that she was then 45, I think, because very many years ago the uniform had been made, yeah.
Did you have any contact with the Korean civilians?
No, I wanted to. It was what they were trying to say, you know. There was about a couple of these, so that, other than that, I never met. I'd never seen anything, to be honest. I mean, when you got on the trails, you might, the most you ever see was perhaps like what was it, some kind of farm building or something, which is really devil like that. When you see these villages, or you see these villages, I've never seen any villages or any people out there.
How did you get home?
From
Korea.
I went back to Hong Kong to wait my top fence, you see. And when we got back to Hong Kong, reinforcements then came from the United Kingdom to build up there. I mean, that's then when you realise, to be quite honest, how many people had not gone back. Because when we went out there, there was 23 on us, and you can say them 23 are at least 18 on national service at that time, it was all up at once, but when we went back, it was only 11 on us.
What happened to the others?
Obviously, that they must have got, because you see, you lose contact, you go out different areas.
Did you ever fall sick in Korea, or have any injuries apart from that cut hand?
No, I can't admit that.
Was your experience in Korea a horrible one or a pleasant one?
Horrible. I think, now, what you went through, the 26 times a week, I mean, he's mercenaries in that now, I wouldn't know. As always, I'm not no sort of bit of war story because we won't be inshallah enough like that, but there's always that chance, you know, that you will be at the next morning.